Katrine Conroy, first elected to the BC legislature back in 2005, and since then she's represented the West Kootenays. In her time in the legislature, she has been, as she is right now, the Minister of Finance. We'll be talking with her about budget and so on. But my conversations with Katrine Conroy go way back as British Columbia. And the state of Washington and other related parties were busy renegotiating the Columbia Basin water, the Columbian Basin Agreement, if you will. Of course, it's all about water in the middle of the Columbia River and the Columbia River Basin. Anyway, we regularly talked, and she gave us updates at that time as to how the negotiations were going on. So very quickly, Katrine Conroy, welcome to the early edition. Is all of that been settled and put to bed?
Good morning, Phil. I wish I could say yes. No, the treaty negotiations are still ongoing. We're at a fairly critical point in the negotiations with the Americans. We hope to be able to get an agreement in principle soon, but we are down to the nitty gritty on what works and what doesn't work for both jurisdictions. So it's an ongoing discussion, and we're hoping things will get to that point pretty quick here.
Where does the sticking point lie? South of the border, on our side of the border? And I'm sorry, I won't take much more time other than to go here.
Well, probably both of us would say either side.
Okay.
we've been fairly clear on what our requests are and what we're looking for. We want to make sure that we have a better treaty than we had, than what was signed for the people of the basin in the 60s. We want to make sure it deals with things like ecosystems, the environmental issues. And we also want to make sure we're paid fairly for what we do here in the basin to control the water flows into the American part of the basin. So we want to make sure that all happens, and we think it's we know we can have a win-win negotiation. I mean, that's always the objective of most negotiations, but some people have to, you got to give and take a bit, but we feel that we need to make sure that we are fairly compensated.
Okay. Listen, I watched as you stood in the BC legislature to present your budget for 2024, yourself, the premier, and the rest of the MLAs in rapt attention as you brought your program forward. A couple of things that and you are going to be here to talk to the Kelowna Chamber of Commerce, so I don't want to steal a whole lot out of whatever you might present there, but in the same breath, framework, I guess, for lack of a better word. There continues to be an exploding demand for services right across this province. The public sector continues to be under pressure to deliver. I keep getting those kinds of stories that, well, I reached out, but I haven't heard, can't seem to get any answers, and so on. That's strictly a matter of bodies and budget, is it not?
For the most part, Phil, yes. You're right. Services continue. Like, the demand for services is strong, but also we've got a growing province. We've had significant immigration. People are coming to BC, and we need them to come. We have a lot of jobs. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country, and we have work for people here. So we're hoping people will come. But with that comes things like, we have to make sure we have enough health care for everybody. We have to make sure we have enough education. And I mean, I'm fairly upfront. I believe we inherited a deficit of services, but we also inherited a deficit of infrastructure. So we have to, people expect to have the hospital services they need when they need them. They expect to have schools when they need them. They expect to have decent roads, and housing is specifically a big one. We're spending a lot of money to try to help people get the housing they need.
Okay, so let's start there. The BC Builds program was unveiled by Premier Eby, and to a degree, I always look at a provincial housing program such as BC Builds, aimed at making housing more affordable and making sure that there's more housing there. But you can't do that in isolation from what goes on in Ottawa. Then we watch as the Prime Minister stands up and talks about the massive commitment that his government is making to creating housing for Canadians. So on both sides, we've got some serious money waiting to be spent. But, Madam Minister, as you and I well know, we don't have the bodies. We don't have the plumbers, the pipe fitters, the electricians, the framers, the builders, the concrete finishers, whatever. We have such a dearth of a workforce. What can we do about that?
Well, there's a number of things we can do, Phil, and one of those is we're expanding seats at our local colleges, universities, post-secondary institutions across the province to make sure that kids that live in BC or growing up, we're telling them, get into the trades, you know, go and take those carpentry, all those trades that you were talking about, electrician, because we need them. You're right. We need people to do the construction, to build those homes, to build all of the things I was talking about, hospitals, schools, and that's why we are, you know, we're making sure that we have those spaces for young people in this province. But we're also looking at fast-tracking credentials for international professionals that are coming to BC and want to work here. Sometimes, you know, you hear about people that have excellent credentials. They come from other countries, especially Commonwealth countries. They have very similar training to what they get here and could get here in BC. And it takes a long time to get those credentials recognized. So we are fast-tracking that, working with the organizations that do that to make sure that we can get more people in to do the work that way. So it's a number of things we're doing, but it's right. We want to make sure that we have the people here that can build all the projects we need built.
You know, you've so eloquently laid out a framework that always seems to be a blockade to somebody who wants to come here. You know, have hammer, will travel kind of thing. Why do we do that to ourselves?
Well, that's a good question, and you know, for some of it, it wasn't thinking ahead, making sure that we had those spaces. You know, and we realized that when we were first elected, we thought, my gosh, we're going to need a lot more things built. We're going to need those people to do that can work in the industries. So, starting to make sure that we have those spaces. We've been at it now for a few years, and those spaces are full in colleges and universities right across the province. I mean, we are seeing people come out with their proper credentials and want to do the work.
Will we ever see, and I know that you're familiar with the Okanagan College, you're certainly aware of the massive new trades program building that has been created and put in place, but already every one of those seats is already filled. Would we ever see the day when a facility like that would run 24/7, 365 almost, maybe 24/7, not 365? Would we look to that kind of a program?
We'd have to see if we have teachers that would want to do that kind of program. I'm not sure, Phil. That's a great question. I'll have to talk to Minister Baer, the Minister of Post-Secondary Education, but that's something that I had certainly never thought about. But
well, why? If there's an instructor,
well,
if there's an instructor.
With MRIs now. Yeah, we're doing it with MRIs and other.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, other medication, like things for the healthcare system. So something to talk to Lisa about. I will raise it with her.
Here's an instructor that doesn't mind opening his class at 10 o'clock in the evening and teaching through till 3 o'clock the following morning because there are people who want to sit in those chairs and absorb the information as it comes at them. Listen.
Give them training for working grave shift. Graveyard.
You got her. There we go.
Shift, afternoon shift, yeah.
Listen, I need to go to a story. There's so many storylines, but I have to go here. Over the weekend, British Columbia formally recognizing the Haida Nation's title to Haida Gwaii. You did in your budget say the BC government is getting ready to forge ahead with reconciliation. This has to be a cornerstone story. I was so happy to hear it.
It's a great story, Phil, and it's been many, many, many years in coming. And lots of work has been done by the Haida, by governments, and to make sure that we're all on the same track. You're right. It's time has come. And it's critical to the people there, and working with industry on in Haida Gwaii, and working with the community itself. It's a good thing for Haida Gwaii, for the nation, for the people that live on Haida Gwaii, but it's also good for BC and good for the economy. I mean, it gives stability and it gives great opportunities. So it is a good thing. It's quite exciting.
And I guess to me, it was done outside the courts. We didn't have to. We didn't have to hammer and tong each other with the lawyers and whatever. It recognized a million hectares of islands of the Haida Gwaii, and it belongs in the ownership and the hands, the direction, the guidance of the Haida First Nation. I just grinned, laughed, and high fived personally all by myself when I read that story over the weekend.
I'm glad to hear you did, Phil, because you know you're right. It's really important to try to resolve these issues outside of court, because once it gets into courts, it can take years. And you know, we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing for the people of BC, but also particularly for the First Nations. And to keep it out of court is critical.
This is a budget item, obviously. Is this maybe a framework that is going to move forward? And I realize that's calling for a conclusion on your part. And if you're not comfortable going, I have no problem pulling the question back. But does this set as a template on a go-forward basis?
It could, Phil, but you have to remember that, you know, each nation is individual. They have their, you know, they have their own issues, and we have to make sure that we're working with First Nations on an individual basis. And we have considerable number of First Nations in BC, 204 compared to the rest of Canada. And we also want to make sure that Canada is involved. I mean, you did mention Canada earlier with our BC Builds program. And you know, Canada is very much a partner when it comes to working with the nations and working through reconciliation. So we want to make sure that Canada is at the table as well.
Finance Minister is watching, I'm sure, and listening carefully as BC's Health Minister stood up and announced a new program that effectively takes hospitalists and links hospitalists with people that are desperate for care and creates new bonding, new teams. I don't know if this was a budgetary item, but it certainly seemed to be a significant step forward for our Health Minister.
Great thing, and it's matching people up who don't have family doctors, making sure they get the supports they need, go online. It's a good thing, and we want to continue to do the work of matching people. I mean, we last year we brought in, it was over 700 doctors to BC, and over 6,500 nurses. And we went from being the lowest, the nurses who are the lowest paid in the country, to now some of the highest paid, and we're attracting more nurses. Like, we need those healthcare professionals in our province, so we want to make sure people are getting the services they need. And Minister Dix is working so hard to make sure that we can do just that.